Okay, think about this for a second. Our digital world, it runs on energy, a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Every video you stream, every search, all this AI stuff, it's happening in these huge data centers.
Yeah.
And get this stat, by 2030, data centers right here in the U.S. are expected to use 9% of all electricity.
9%. That's massive.
It really is. It's nearly a third of what homes and businesses use together.
Wow.
So clearly we've got this enormous energy demand and we need solutions that are, well, reliable, but also sustainable.
Absolutely. You can't keep scaling like that on infrastructure that's already strained.
Exactly. And that brings us to our deep dive today. We're looking at hydrogen fuel cells. There's a lot of buzz around them as maybe a key part of a cleaner energy future, especially, you know, given the problems with our current power grids.
Mm-hmm.
And the information we're digging into comes from the experts over at Hydrogen Informs. So our mission really is to figure out why hydrogen fuel cells are getting so much attention now. Why are they seen as vital for resilience and clean energy when the old grid is, well, creaking a bit?
That statistic about data centers really sets the stage, doesn't it? It just highlights how much these new technologies, like AI, are pushing the boundaries of what our current power systems can handle.
Totally. And it's not just future demand, right?
Sure.
The grid we have now is already under serious pressure. I mean, look at California back in 2019. They had over 25,000 blackouts.
25,000.
Yeah. And that was a 23% increase from the year before. Makes you really wonder what's going on underneath.
It really does. And those California blackouts, they're a perfect storm, really, illustrating several deep issues. First off, a lot of the U.S. grid is just old. Many power lines are 30, 40 years old, maybe more, without major upgrades.
40 years. Wow. Things weren't designed for today's loads back then.
Exactly. They're operating way past their expected life sometimes. And decentralized power, like fuel cells, just bypasses that whole aging transmission issue. And second, there just hasn't been enough consistent investment in modernizing everything to keep up, not just with demand, but with, you know, all the extreme weather we're seeing.
Yeah, that seems undeniable. Every year, the storms, the fires, they just hammer the grid.
They really do. And then you layer on the way the U.S. grid is structured. It's
right.
Fragmented. We basically have three separate grids, east, west, and Texas, and they're largely isolated from each other.
Right. I've heard about that. So if one area has a massive problem, the others can't easily pitch in.
Precisely. It limits flexibility in a big way during emergencies. Texas is the classic example, right? When those severe storms hit, their isolated grid made recovery much harder and way more expensive because they couldn't easily import power.
It's like having three separate buckets, and you can't pour water between them easily when one's running dry.
That's a good analogy, yeah.
And you can see how that leads to huge problems in a crisis. It's not just inconvenient for us at home, is it? Businesses must take a huge hit financially.
Oh, absolutely. The costs are staggering. Estimates run from maybe $300,000 up to $1 million per hour of downtime for some businesses.
Per hour? Ouch.
Yeah. And those disruptions just ripple through the whole economy. Plus, there are hidden costs for all of us energy consumers, billions every year just in transmission fees to move electricity across those long distances.
Billions in fees. So, okay, the cost of moving power, the reliability issues, it all points towards generating power closer to where you actually need it.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings us right back to hydrogen fuel cells.
Okay.
Let's break it down. For anyone listening who isn't familiar, what is a hydrogen fuel cell, basically?
Okay, so at its heart, a hydrogen fuel cell is a device that takes hydrogen gas and converts it directly into electricity. It does this through a chemical reaction, not burning. Think of it maybe like a battery, but one that doesn't run down as long as you keep feeding it hydrogen.
Okay, like a continuously running battery. Got it.
Mm-hmm.
What's inside?
Well, the three main parts are the anode, the cathode, and then something called an electrolyte sandwiched in the middle.
Anode, cathode, electrolyte.
Right.
So how do they work together to make electricity?
So it starts with hydrogen gas flowing into the anode side. There's a catalyst there. Think of it like a helper material that encourages the hydrogen molecules, H2, to split apart. They split into positively charged protons, which are just hydrogen ions, and negatively charged electrons.
Okay, splitting the hydrogen.
Yep. Now, the electrolyte in the middle, it's special. It only lets the protons pass through it to get to the cathode side. The electrons can't go through the electrolyte, so they're forced to take a different path. They travel through an external circuit like wires to get to the cathode.
Ah, and that flow of electrons through the wires is the electricity we can use.
Exactly. That flow is the electric current.
Clever. So the electrons take the long way around, creating power. What about the protons that went through the middle? What happens when they reach the cathode?
So on the cathode side, those protons that came through the electrolyte meet up with two things. Oxygen, usually just taken from the air, and those electrons that just finished their trip through the external circuit. They all combine protons, oxygen, electrons, and the result. Just water vapor, H2O.
That's it. Just water. No CO2, no smoke, nothing else.
That's the beauty of it. Zero carbon emissions right at the point of generation. The only byproducts are electricity, heat, and water vapor.
Well, that's obviously a massive environmental advantage compared to burning fossil fuels.
Huge. It positions fuel cells as a really clean alternative for power generation, directly tackling greenhouse gas emissions. And this isn't just theory. These systems are real. Modern fuel cells can power whole buildings now, and, you know, people are seriously looking at them for homes down the line, too.
Okay, zero emissions is a huge selling point. What are some of the other big advantages? Why else are people excited about them?
Well, sticking with the environment for a second, if you scale this up, replacing fossil fuels with hydrogen fuel cells could be a really critical piece of the puzzle for hitting climate goals. It's a direct way to decarbonize power generation.
Makes total sense. Cleaner air, less climate impact. What about reliability? We're just talking about all those grid blackouts.
Yeah, this is another major plus, because you can have these fuel cell systems located right where you need the power decentralized. They offer much better reliability and resilience compared to relying solely on the big centralized grid. Think about natural disasters. When storms or fires knock out power lines over a large area, a local fuel cell system can just keep running, providing continuous power.
Right, so hospitals, emergency services, data centers.
Yeah.
Places that absolutely cannot lose power.
Exactly. For critical facilities like those, having reliable on-site power that isn't dependent on miles of vulnerable transmission lines is incredibly important.
That feels much more secure. Okay, what about practicality? Are these things enormous? Do they need constant fiddling and maintenance?
Actually, modern fuel cells are getting quite compact. And compared to, say, a traditional generator or a power plant, they often require less maintenance. Their size and relatively low maintenance make them a good fit for places that are maybe hard to reach with grid infrastructure, rural areas, remote sites.
Okay, so potentially easier to deploy in some tricky spots.
Definitely. And there's another angle here, energy storage. You can use excess electricity, maybe from solar panels on a sunny day or wind turbines on a windy night, to produce hydrogen gas through electrolysis.
Electrolysis. That's splitting water using electricity.
That's the one. You split water into hydrogen and oxygen. You can then store that hydrogen. Later, when the sun isn't shining or the wind isn't blowing, you feed that stored hydrogen back into the fuel cell to generate electricity.
Ah, so it solves the intermittency problem with renewables. You store the energy chemically as hydrogen.
Precisely. It acts like a battery in that sense, but potentially for longer durations and larger scales. It makes fuel cells a really great partner for renewables, smoothing out the supply.
Okay, let's loop back quickly to the old grid's problems.
Yeah.
How do fuel cells directly tackle those weak spots we identified earlier? The aging lines, the weather vulnerability, the transmission costs?
They hit those points directly. First, by generating power locally, you reduce or even eliminate the need for those long, aging, vulnerable transmission lines. Less reliance on infrastructure that can fail.
Right, power closer to home.
Second, those significant costs tied to transmitting power over hundreds of miles, including the energy lost along the way. Local generation with fuel cells cuts those down dramatically.
And the resilience during extreme weather.
That's where decentralized systems really shine. As we said, when hurricanes or wildfires take down the main grid, often for days or weeks, localized fuel cells can keep essential services online. It shifts the model from dependence on one massive, potentially fragile system to a network of more resilient, independent power sources. It's a fundamental shift in thinking about grid reliability.
It sounds good on paper, but is this actually happening? Are fuel cells being used in the real world now?
Oh, absolutely. It's not just lab research anymore. We're seeing real adoption, especially in industrial and commercial spaces. Data centers are a prime example. They're looking hard at fuel cells. Why? Well, partly to cut their carbon footprint, which we know is huge.
And partly for that uninterrupted operation, I bet. Downtime must be incredibly costly for them.
Exactly. Reliability is paramount. Fuel cells can offer that, either as primary power or as a very clean, very reliable backup system.
Makes sense. Anywhere else besides buildings?
Yep. Transportation is another big area. We're seeing hydrogen fuel cells powering vehicles, buses, trucks. even some trains now. The big advantage there is, again, zero tailpipe emissions, just water. So it's great for improving air quality, especially in cities.
Okay, so the potential is definitely there, and it's starting to be realized. But what's holding back wider adoption? Why aren't we seeing them everywhere yet?
There are still hurdles, for sure. The main ones right now are probably the initial cost of the fuel cell systems themselves, although that's coming down. And maybe even more significantly, the need for a robust hydrogen infrastructure.
Meaning ways to produce the hydrogen cleanly and then get it to where the fuel cells are.
Exactly. We need large-scale production of clean hydrogen, ideally green hydrogen made using renewable energy for electrolysis. Mm-hmm. And then we need the pipelines, the storage, the refueling stations. Building out that whole supply chain takes time and significant investment.
So, cost and infrastructure. Are we making progress on those fronts?
Yes, definitely. There's a lot of research and development happening globally to bring down fuel cell costs, improve their efficiency, make them last longer. And as manufacturing scales up, you naturally see costs decrease. That's starting to happen. But government policies and incentives are really crucial here, too.
How so?
Well, things like financial support for R&D, tax credits for deploying fuel cells or building hydrogen infrastructure, setting clear targets. All of that helps to accelerate adoption and create a market. It helps bridge that initial cost gap.
So technology improvements need to go hand in hand with supportive policies. Makes sense.
Yeah.
It can't just be government throwing money at it, though, right?
No, absolutely not. Public-private partnerships are going to be key. You need industry, government, researchers all working together to build out that hydrogen infrastructure. The production facilities, the pipelines, the storage. It's a massive undertaking.
Okay, so assuming we navigate these challenges, the costs come down, the infrastructure gets built, the policies are helpful, paint a picture for us. What does that energy future look like with widespread hydrogen fuel cell use?
It looks, well, significantly cleaner and more reliable, I think. You'd see a substantial drop in greenhouse gas emissions from the power sector. You'd likely see much better energy security and accessibility, especially for communities that are currently underserved by the grid or are very vulnerable to outages. And by integrating tightly with renewables, like we talked about, using hydrogen for storage, you get greater energy independence because you're relying more on domestic clean resources.
So pulling it all together, it really sounds like hydrogen fuel cells are more than just an interesting technology.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to offer tangible solutions to some really big, pressing challenges we face with energy today.
That's exactly right.
A pathway towards, hopefully, a cleaner and definitely more resilient energy system.
That's the core takeaway, I believe. They represent a genuinely transformative opportunity to move beyond the limitations of the grid we have now.
Right. Maybe this is the final thought to leave everyone with today. Think about the trends, more extreme weather, ever-increasing power demand from things like AI. What are the real long-term costs socially, economically, if we don't push hard for these kinds of decentralized, zero-emission solutions like hydrogen fuel cells? It's a pretty important question to ponder. If you want to dive even deeper into this, explore more angles, definitely check out Hydrogen Informs. They've got a wealth of insights,